It's time for Explore Fairbanks on KFAR Radio, talking everything tourism and exploring all that the Golden Heart City has to offer for visitors and residents alike. Brought to you by Explore Fairbanks, located in the Morris Thompson Cultural and Visitor Center in downtown Fairbanks. And now, here's the crew from Explore Fairbanks.
Well, it's kind of a crew of one, really. Well, yes, welcome to Explore Fairbanks, talking everything tourism and exploring Fairbanks in the Golden Heart City. I'm your host for today, Jerry Evans, wearing my hat as the Public Relations Manager for Explore Fairbanks. Joining me in the studio today is Alaska Department of Fish and Game Wildlife Biologist and Educator, Mark Ross. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Jerry.
How's it going?
Pretty well.
Nice. So cool to get you up in here. We've been big fan of Creamer's Field. I live just down the street from there, so I see you there often. You probably do the same. And and kind of the great thing about Creamer's Field, talking from the Explore Fairbanks point of view, is that it's an important place for locals, but for visitors as well. It's a magnet for visitors.
Yeah, you could say it's a tourist attraction. And of course, there's lots of folks around town that take advantage of the resource that the refuge is.
Right. Now, I was reading somewhere for the tourism side of things, and this is probably a couple years old. I saw the number of 20,000 people from all over the world visited, not just the Farmhouse Visitor Center. So probably more actually visit Creamer's Field as well.
Sure. I mean, if we're talking about the local citizenry, I was tasked a ways back with trying to make an estimate, and I came up with like 80,000 visits. Wow. Plus.
Yeah.
I mean, there's besides the well-known dairy buildings as a starting point, there's other access areas too.
Right.
And the viewing up front.
Well, now since we're talking about Creamer's Field and we're on KFAR, I thought it might be an interesting idea to go down memory lane because don't know exactly how Creamer's Field got to be such a public thing. And because we all know it started off as a dairy, but we don't really know the history and the handoff.
Right. Well, actually, it started out as a homestead.
Okay.
A homestead known as Murray's Meadow in the late 1800s, early 1900s, Murray's Meadow. And then around 1905, a dairy family purchased the area, came into the area. The Hinckley family came in from Nome. They had the first dairy in Nome during the gold rush in Nome, which, of course, played out around 1905. So the Hinckley family moved their operation to Fairbanks. They loaded up their few cows on a stern wheeler the Yukon, up the Tanana to Fairbanks. And from the way the history reads, they paid their way selling raw milk to the people on the. They paid their fare by selling raw milk on the stern wheeler.
That's funny. I'm a St. Joe's born back in 1960, and I didn't even know the history going back that far.
Yeah. That's when dairying started there.
And that was is it still at about 2,200 acres?
The refuge property is about closer to 2,500 now.
Okay. And that was all one homesteaded area?
No. The homestead, of course, 160 acres, which is what we see the agricultural fields in the front, which is about three. You see 300 acres when you pull into off College Road into the viewing area. You see around 300 acres of agricultural fields. And that would be the original homestead. The Creamers purchased it from the Hinckleys in 1928.
Okay. So how did it get to the point where it got handed over and eventually under the umbrella of Alaska Department of Fish and Game for public use?
The Creamers purchased the small Hinckley dairy in 1928, and the dairy really thrived under the ownership of the Creamers. You see the big barns now, the two big Iowa-style barns, and the processing plant that has the name Creamer's Dairy on top. And it grew large enough that they had a herd of about 175 head. And so you milk at least half of those, so they were getting a good quantity of product, milk, and, of course, ice cream.
Oh, gosh, yes.
I mean, yeah, Creamer's Dairy, very famous for ice cream. In the mid-50s, they were producing 600 gallons a day. A day, 600 gallons of ice cream, along with all the other butter, milk, cream, and other products. So,
so I'm guessing it really thrived. So but, maybe that would have gone out to other areas as too, because I mean there was a pretty low population base at that point.
Yes. They were shipping products down to, on the road system, down to Anchorage, you know, close to the Yukon border. And then when air service came up, they were flying products up to Barrow, whose name now is...
Utqiagvik.
So, yeah, it really, really thrived. And during World War II, the workers were exempt from the draft because they were considered essential service, providing product, dairy products and food to the LAD Army Air Force Base, now Fort Wainwright. So it really thrived, but World War II kind of came back to bite them because in the 60s and in the late 50s, the big corporations like Carnation were getting their products shipped up subsidized air freight by the federal government.
Got it. They
were undercutting prices of the creamers. And Charlie and Anna were 80 years old in the mid-60s, and Anna passed away in 1965. And according to their only son, Don, who was at the time part owner with his mom, Anna, and his dad, Charlie, according to Don, that was the straw that broke the dairy's back, the passing of Anna. So they decided to sell. And the Creamer family, Charlie Creamer, let the community know that the agricultural fields could be a wildlife refuge because it was always, those fields always a beloved place for Fairbanksons, seeing waterfowl come in the spring,
right?
Thousands and thousands of geese and ducks. And so there was an article in the local newspaper, Jessen's Weekly, and Charlie Creamer was quoted saying, purchase these fields, you can have the start of a wildlife refuge. The community moved on it right away. People of Fairbanks, grassroots conservation. It only took 1 year, and the fields were purchased. There was a local fundraising drive. Hundreds of people donated monies. School kids. There was a big effort by the school, many, many school kids, many classes in Fairbanks to raise the money. And this is where the Department of Fish and Game comes in. The Fish and Game Department was chosen to be the manager. And so as a state manager, the state has access to federal monies.
Right.
So those Pittman Robertson monies came through, and the balance and so they got the monies, and the purchase was made, and it just took 1 year.
Wow.
1 year. Wow, really quick grassroots conservation.
Well, go ahead.
The 300 acres was the start of the refuge known back then as Fairbanks Management Area.
That's very interesting. So does the city still own Creamer's Field, or how does that work?
Well,
we don't need to get too far.
Creamer's Field, the title of the refuge is Creamer's Field Migratory Waterfowl Refuge, and it's managed by the state of Alaska, Department of Fish and Game. Well, who's the state of Alaska? The people of Alaska.
Right, sure, of course.
Now, a lot of people don't realize it, but 100 acres of that refuge is right within the city limits.
Okay.
That's how close it is to the populace in the city. The front south 100 acres is actually within the city limits of Fairbanks.
Right. Now, at the time, that probably would have been considered way out of town. I like to point out when they were building what became Main High School, or that school, there was controversy because a lot of people thought building it there was too far out of the city. You know what I mean? So,
really?
So I'm guessing at this point, the Creamer's Field seemed like it was way out in the boondocks almost.
Yeah, well, it was. College Road then was Esther Road. So I guess that kind of denotes that, well, it was a little ways out of town, since Esther is 10 miles away or so, or 15.
Well, but before we jump away from history, so at what point then do community dances and some of those social things that I seen pictures of out in the old barn and that kind of stuff, was that during under the Creamer umbrella, or did that come afterwards?
Yeah, that was a big celebration when you think of the barn dance in the big Iowa barn, the barn on the west side of the historic buildings. That was a big celebration of the barn raising when that was finished. The Creamers invited the community to come out and have a dance up in the loft of the barn.
Okay.
And from what I've read in the historic documents, there were 1,000 people that attended.
Wow.
They had an orchestra up there playing, and it was a big affair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's outstanding. Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. Now that it's Creamer's Field as we know it, tell me a little bit about the trail system, because I know a lot of it is very accessible right there around the cabin, but you can go a ways back in there, and some people might not realize how far the trail system might go back there, how far into Creamer's Field you can actually walk.
The refuge itself, the refuge property is 2,500 acres, but that 2,500 acres is within the perimeter of University Ave, Farmers Loop Road, the Steese Highway, and then College Road. And in within that perimeter, that's probably 5,000 acres. And the trail system extends all throughout that 5,000 acres. And, of course, into the 2,500 acres of the refuge, too. Those are the Alaska Dog Mushers Association trails, primarily.
Okay.
That is a super extensive system. Of course, we know that the North American Dog Race has a 30-mile event, so there's at least 30 miles in there, but with all the bypasses and additional trails coming from other entrance areas, there could be 35 to 40 miles in there.
Got it.
And during the winter, the agricultural fields have 3 miles of trails in the winter.
So that's interesting because, again, being born and raised here, I'm used to coming into the field through the barn area and those trails, and occasionally just on the rim of it by the Dog Mushers Hall. But like you say, I've never accessed it from the Farmers Loop side near the university.
Sure.
The other one. The other direction.
A highly used access point is the Dog Mushers Association, the Dog Mushers Hall. You know, that's an access point. And now the golf course on the west side. What is that, Fairbanks Country Club? What's the name of that course?
Fairbanks Golf and Country Club, I think maybe. I'll be corrected if I'm wrong.
I was sure you were a golfer. No. But that is a big access point. Their clubhouse is open. People that want to ski or walk can park in their parking lot. They can access the clubhouse for warmth and food and that sort of thing. And then the trails, they have groomed trails there of a few miles, and it's just 200 yards to the refuge trails.
All right, well, you're listening to Explore Fairbanks here on KFR Radio. I'm Jerry Evans, being joined in the studio by Alaska Department of Fish and Game Wildlife biologist and educator Mark Ross. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and talk about some of the programs that people could take advantage of at Creamer's Field. We'll talk a little bit about the Friends of Creamer's Field, and how you can become involved in that if you should choose, and maybe a little bit about some bird migration, because that's always interesting. We'll return with Explore Fairbanks right after this.
We will continue to explore Fairbanks right after this short message from our sponsors.
Escape into the wild winter wonders of Alaska with Rod's Alaskan Guide Service, your gateway to unforgettable adventures right here in Fairbanks. Whether you're a seasoned outdoor enthusiast or a first-time adventurer, Rod's Alaskan Guide Service offers memorable and authentic experiences for everyone, including dog sledding, snow machining, ice fishing, and aurora viewing. At Rod's Alaskan Guide Service, their goal is for their seasoned guides to give each customer a peek into Alaska's wild side with a personal touch. So book your next adventure now at rodsalaskanguideservice.com or call 907-378-1851 for Rod's Alaskan Guide Service.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's websites and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs, starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m. The Buzz at 11:30. Brought to you by the Tanana Herb Company. Followed by Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical at noon. And then it's the Compos Outdoor Show at 12:30. Fairbanks Foodies at 1 p.m. And Explore Fairbanks at 1:30. All 3 hours of local shows can be found on the KFAR website in the archives section. Weekends just got local with KFAR Radio. Now back to Explore Fairbanks on KFAR Radio.
Yeah, that'll
just. And we're back with Explore Fairbanks. I'm Jerry Evans, once again being joined by Mark Ross from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And we're talking about Creamer's Field. And we talked a little bit about the trail system and the way that locals utilize it and the obviously on-land parts with the observation decks that are easily accessible to most people for a nice little walk is great. But sure, there's always been that boardwalk trail system that has gone through varying degrees of pristine to uprooted and sometimes mm-hmm. in the middle. So where is that system at right now?
Okay.
Where do you see it going?
Let me give you a little history on that. It's a one-mile loop that's about a quarter mile from the farmhouse and the barns. It's a one-mile loop through the boreal forest, and it was first finished in 1975. Historically, this valley is a near semi-desert region as far as precipitation goes, the average annual precipitation. Well, that has changed dramatically since 2014. It was like a climatic switch flipped. That switch flipped, and it has devastated that half mile of elevated boardwalk. Why? Because the trail, the loop, is intersected by an ancient channel of the Tanana River. Okay. Researchers have seen that those soils in the channel that runs east and west are Tanana River remains. And during the last ice age, the glaciers, of course, were much more extensive, closer to the north, and that river system flowed right through there. Now it fills with snow melt and rainwater, and more extensively since 2014 when that precipitation increase happened, and it just destroys the elevated boardwalk. The elevated boardwalk is there because it spanned that river, that ancient river channel. And with the increased precipitation comes permafrost damage, too, because that area, as soon as you get out of the agricultural fields, just north of them where that loop is, there's extensive permafrost. Polygonal ground formed by the thermal karst. It fills with water now extensively. April through sometimes right through to September, October even flooding. And so those freeze up and they get larger and larger, creating what you see those trees that are falling over because the center of the polygons raises up as the thawing increases. The thawing increases, the ice expands, it pushes up the centers, you see trees falling.
Right.
And all of the standing dead that you see now primarily happened in 2014. June of 2014, The birches could not green up. Their roots were drowned. We don't have swamps up here, technically. We have no swamp-adapted woody plants or trees. So, you know, they can't breathe.
They're not prepared for that.
Yeah, they're not prepared for that extensive flooding during green-up, and so they died. And now that's been happening a little more every year since then.
So now what is the what's in store for the future of the boardwalk?
Right now we're in the demolition phase. Pulling it all out, about 75% done, and it'll be finished by the end of this winter season. And hopefully, we're going to have a rebuild complete by the middle of August this year, 2024.
Well, now, this might be a good time to bring up another group that's heavily involved in Creamer's Field. Of course, that is the Friends of Creamer's Field. Now, I'm guessing they're keeping an eye on this as well. How do the Friends of, in a short amount of time, how do the Friends of Creamer's Field fit into the whole scheme of things?
The Friends of Creamer's Field were established in 1991, and their mission is to utilize the resources of the refuge, the natural and historic resources of the refuge, to promote lifelong learning programs and increase stewardship of the natural environment and the refuge itself. And so they have quite a calendar of events that people can participate in and help out with.
And people can become involved in that should they choose?
Oh, yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, well, folks are probably aware that the Farmhouse Visitor Center is a small museum, natural history museum, and dairy history museum, and we can use help in there. It takes a staff of 15 or so folks to run that, especially during the summer. And if folks are interested, they can contact Friends of Creamer's Field to get involved in more of their programs, too.
Right. And when you talk to KFAR listeners, we got some people that have been up here a while and know about the place, and it would be great for them to be able to share some of their knowledge and to learn more knowledge and share that with visitors.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's great. It's great to have folks that are familiar with the area that can share their local knowledge and their history knowledge of the area.
Right. So with Friends of Creamer's Field, there's a number of events and programs that they put on, and the schedule is pretty extensive. So can we quickly go through just a few of those and some that,
sure,
that might be the mean the most to the locals?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we start with the Valentine's Day crafts. Now, that's the one that you say you actually don't
know
that much
new.
About.
I believe that's really new, maybe started last year. I'm not really familiar with what happened during that Valentine's okay. Day craft.
That's the most upcoming one. That's on February 8th. So we'll talk about, let's go into the summertime just a little bit. And, of course, there's a complete schedule on list, once again, at friendsofcreamersfield.org. You can find out all this and even more information. We have the one that's always fun in the summertime is the Design Alaska Wild Arts Walk.
Yeah, the Wild Arts Walk, that's been going on since about 2008, I believe. And there's about a 1 or 2 mile loop and on the trails, and there are about 25 to 30 artists that are along that loop showing their skills and their wares, and people can come out and walk along there and see what's happening in the art scene.
Yeah, and there's so much stuff. There's a nest box building that's happening in March. There's a Creamer's Dairy Day. That's always a fun day. We always make it a point to make sure we go by. That's July 21st this year. And the Tana Valley Hill Crane Festival. And not just for locals, but that's one where birders come from all over the place, don't they?
Yes, yeah. A lot of people that are interested in wildlife and birds will attend that festival. And it's been going on. I believe the first one started in 1998, and it's the signature event for the Friends of Creamer's Field and the refuge itself.
Right. And that takes place August 23rd through the 21st.
Yeah, it happens at the height of fall migration. And there can often be 2,500 sandhill cranes into 300 agricultural acres, along with another couple thousand geese and ducks. And, of course, the other migratory birds are moving through, too, songbirds and birds of prey.
Now, speaking of migratory birds, when I first came to work at KFAR and Wolf 98 way back in the days in the late 80s, at that point, there was a contest called Goose Watch. And that's still in effect to this day, isn't it?
Yep, that's still in effect. Folks can take guesses at when the first geese are going to land on the fields. Canada geese, now known as white-cheeked geese. I won't get into that technicality, but Canada geese. And no longer is it just one goose, because there was a particular person in town that let a couple, that let a goose go on the field, because people can keep domestic Canada geese.
My goodness.
So now it's got to be three geese with feet on the field.
Okay.
That's considered the first arrival now.
Now, is it getting harder and harder to make sure you verify who is seeing it?
Believe it or not, I mean, I'm the final word on that.
Okay.
And it's gone pretty smoothly over the years.
Okay, good.
And it usually happens in the morning or in close to the noon part of the day when the geese come in. Now, the farmhouse, I have it set up with three microphones outside that are on year round. I hear these geese fly over before they land.
Of course you do. Of course, I would expect that of you, Mark. So, of course, in the KFAR Goose Watch, and I remember, I keep calling it Goose Watcher because I remember when the days when Bill Wallace sang that old jingle. They still play that one.
Oh, yeah.
So we still get to hear Wee Willie Wally's voice every once in a while on the airwaves here in Fairbanks, which is always kind of nice. So let's talk just a little bit more about the migratory birds. You said the order of when they're getting in and what's getting in when has changed a little bit.
Sure. You know, bird populations are rather dynamic. Increasing or decreasing, and trumpeter swans have greatly increased in the last 30 to 40 years. You know, they were an endangered species. In 1970 in North America, I believe there were less than 1,000. Now, I believe the continent-wide count is probably up towards 100,000 trumpeter swans. And in the last couple of years, a few trumpeter swans have dropped in before Canada geese. But a swan's not a goose, so they don't count.
There you go.
They're a lot bigger.
Yeah.
They don't count. They got to be a Canada goose.
People that spot them might not realize that, but yeah, that's exactly why you're here, Mark.
Well, one more technicality.
What's that?
There's no longer just Canada geese. There's a cackling goose that looks just like a Canada goose. It's just smaller. In 2004, it was named its own species. So,
okay, so that's something to keep in mind. I don't know.
I guess it counts as a white. It should be the white-cheeked geese. Yeah, they count. That's what it is. I guess I'm the final word. So, white-cheeked geese.
Yeah. Well, I hate to tell you this, Mark, but the rest of us don't know the difference. We just, matter of fact, I might call chickadees. Who knows? All right, Mark. I want to thank you for joining us. Is there anything that we may have left out quickly?
Well, let's see here. Cold. Oh, the place is cold. It's always at least 5 degrees colder in the winter on the refuge than the report from the airport.
So keep that in mind.
People need to be prepared. And we've got plenty of darkness to appreciate in the wintertime.
Yep.
A quarter mile away from College Road, aurora viewing for especially folks from out of town. Just step out into the fields a few hundred yards. You've got a great night sky view, and there's a lot of aurora seekers that come out.
Excellent. Well, again, we're short on time. Mark, I want to thank you very much. You've been listening to Explore Fairbanks. We've been talking with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game wildlife biologist and educator, and he's educated me, Mark Ross. For more information about Creamer's Field, you can log on to friendsofcreamersfield.org. Easy enough to do. Well, you've been listening to Explore Fairbanks on KFAR Radio. For more information, log on to explorefairbanks.com. And to listen to this or any past shows, log on to KFAR Archives page at kfarradio.com. This has been a presentation of Last Frontier Media Active.
You have been listening to Explore Fairbanks on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com. To listen back to this program or any past shows, simply log on to our website and click on the Archives page. Explore Fairbanks has been a production of Last Frontier Media Active.